It's showtime, Jimmy Dean the Wolf.
Hey, hey.
Podcast. Cue interesting music.
This podcast feels very official because you have headphones on.
Yes, yes. I'm Joel.
We're getting fancy these days.
Well, we're working on this a little bit, and seemed like I had a feedback issue, so I thought I would just add this and do it with headphones. All right. Well, how did your Colts do in the weekend?
They blew it, man. We lost in overtime to the Titans, division rival. We would have won, but our coach likes to go for it on fourth down instead of take field goals, easy field goals. So we blew it. Coach kind of lost the game for us. Second one this season, he's cost us by not taking field goals. Just take the points.
Well, he could get fired. They fire them all the time.
Our owner would have to sober up long enough to fire him. So I don't know that that's going to happen.
I had a mouthful of coffee that I almost spit out when you said that.
Yeah, Jim Irsay is kind of does his own thing. But they're still my Colts. I love them till the end of time.
Well, got to be loyal.
Yeah, it's just hard to be a fan sometimes. It's frustrating. And they're actually really good this year. Like, they could beat anybody. We've just lost some really close games. We've had a lot of injuries. It's been up here to watch.
Well, what should we talk about today, Jimmy?
Whatever you want, man. We could talk about, you know, my favorite topics are always music and business. Not the music business, though. They have to be two completely different things.
Well, this is an age-old one. I ran across a Quora post, and I responded to the long, scathing response, and I posted it, and I deleted it. I decided, I don't want to get into a pissing match with anybody. But the premise was, and the guy was younger than I thought. I went to his page. I thought he would be older. But he was saying that current rock artists suck compared to yesteryear. And he showed a picture of Fleetwood Mac, Rumors. And he said, there ain't no current rock artist that is going to sell 40 million albums. And part of my post was like, that's like saying there's no buggy whip manufacturer who's ever going to sell as many buggy whips as they sold in 1901 or whatever was a peak year for buggy whip sales. I mean, if people bought 40 million CDs, which would most likely be, where are they going to play them? You know, they don't even put CD players in cars anymore. Are they going to use them for coasters? You know, do you have a CD player in your home? You probably do because you're a music fan. Do you have a way of playing the CD? You probably have in your vehicle.
I do. In my vehicle and in my home. I have a record player here. So, but I'm an exception to the rule. I think most people don't.
Well, I mean, it's phasing out. My 2011 Mercedes has a CD changer. I think you can put C6 in it, but I know the current ones don't have any CD player.
Right. Mine's
10 years old now. 10 years old. I don't see.
We're on 2011.
Okay. So 2011, we both have 2011 vehicles. I don't know. At some point, they stopped putting them in vehicles. By the way, sidetrack. I'm going to correct you on a point. And we'll get back to this. My car has a cigarette lighter.
Does it?
You said they didn't put them in cars anymore.
Well,
Jeff says 2009 Prius has a CD player. Yeah, I would expect. I would think around 2015, 16, 17, they stopped putting CD players in. But in an earlier comment, Jimmy scoffed at me when I said putting the cigarette lighter. And I looked at it's not just a charger adapt for, you know, you can charge your phone. I literally found, of course, I don't smoke, so I don't use it. There's an ashtray And in the ashtray, I found rattling around, as soon as I got the car, I took it out, was the cigarette lighter. And my 2011, of course, you know, Mercedes tends to be older people, perhaps, and they smoke more in Europe. So,
yeah.
So I wonder if a 2022 would have a cigarette lighter. That's an interesting.
I'd be surprised, man. You don't see them very often anymore.
I got something in my teeth. Better not smile anymore.
So the guy was saying that
what's that?
The guy was saying that rock bands are garbage compared to the old rock.
Right. And he was saying that there's no rock band that's gonna, you know, it's gonna sell 40 million copies. I mean, consumption of music in the U.S. today is 90% streaming. So of that 10%, would, in order to equal a great-selling album like Rumors, probably one of the best-selling ever, you'd have to sell 10x more than Rumors did. And is any band going to do that? No. I mean, you have to have 10x the celebrity, because 90% of consumption of music is streaming. So in order to say, yeah, we need to sell 40 million copies, no bands are as good as they were back then, because they're not selling CDs like they were, or records. I mean, back then it was vinyl. Now, vinyl has taken off as a niche, and even at all ages, people, even, you know, 20-something people are getting into vinyl. But it's kind of a niche thing. It's not your general thing. You know, people collect vinyl, and it's a significant deal. In fact, vinyl now has outgrown CDs. Each year in the year 2021, I don't know what year it overtook, maybe 2020, vinyl now sells more units than CDs do. But CDs have been falling off a cliff, 50% year-on-year decrease. You keep decreasing by 50%, eventually you get insignificant.
Sure.
If you start at 100, I mean, just take any number. You got 100 million, 100,000, you're down to 50,000 in 1 year, 25,000, 12,000. It doesn't take very long, and you're very insignificant. You know, in about 3 years, you're down to, you know, 6% of where you were for 4 years. So CDs have been dropping by 50% year on year, and vinyl has been growing at 50% a year. But that's not going to, you know, vinyl is not going to be what it was when I was in college. You know, that's not going to happen. And it's a niche thing. It's not a general marketplace thing. So there's never going to be a 40 million records sold. It's not going to happen. I don't care who it is. BTS, Taylor Swift. And pick your artist. So that's first of all, to use that metric. And then to say that, you know, musicians aren't any good. And one post was, everybody is all of the grumpy old men, you know, get off my lawn. That's where I put them, the get off my lawn type guys. It was better back in the day, blah, blah, blah. They're all saying that record companies groom the artists and made them better and all that kind of stuff. And that's bullpucky. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. I do think there's a thing, though, that's not quantifiable, but very real, that the old bands, you know, the bands from the 60s and 70s and prior to had much, much stronger live game.
Oh, unquestionable.
Than current bands, because they didn't have technology nowadays.
No doubt about it, sir. No doubt. In fact, I read articles about it. You know, Little Nas X, the guy that had the huge hit a few years, it broke all records for the most weeks at number one of the Hot 100 with Old Town Road, had Billy Ray Cyrus jump on with him. His first live performance was when he was at an award show for winning an award for Old Town Road.
Right.
So that's radically different than back in the, I mean, he blew up because he built about 50 TikTok memes for that song. And he used social media, modern technology, that sort of thing, and used the studio, and wasn't a road warrior improving his live musical chops. And there was an article that I read that in Billboard, I read every issue of the Billboard that comes out because it's the music business. And there was an article there where they said, yeah, these up and coming artists, a lot of them, they don't tour their butt off, and therefore their live game, like you said, is inferior. and all of these smaller venues where these people. I saw Post Malone. Let's talk about Post Malone. Arguably one of, if not the biggest artist in the country, maybe even the world. He won the Billboard Artist of the Year 2 years running, 2020 and 2019. Top artist based on that award, Post Malone. And we saw him live. And my nephew, Seth, was all excited about seeing Post Malone. We saw him at Bonnaroo in 2019, I think it was. And Seth pushed his way to the front. He left our, we had, you know, it was a festival. So you kind of find your little place and you make your blanket and you make your little home spot there and make sure to put your blanket out so people can't encroach on your territory and that sort of thing. And he left our little area. My other nephew and him were holding on the fort, so to speak, way back. You know, we weren't that close. And he pushed us all the way to the front, like he left us an hour and a half before showtime because he wanted to get all the way up to the front. And he spent all that time to get up there, and or maybe an hour before, whatever it was. And Post Malone came out, and he was so bummed at the performance, how bad it was. And he's such a huge fan of Post Malone. He literally left halfway through the show, and he said, screw this, I'm out of here. And went to go see another band playing at another stage. They had five stages going on. And the Post Malone came out. There was nobody else on the stage. I mean, we're talking about a big festival. Bonnaroo is a big festival at the number one stage. The stage is huge. You could have probably a 100-piece orchestra on there. And he's the only one on the stage. And there was no pyrotechnics, no light show, nothing. He just came out with a mic and sang to his finished tracks. They didn't even take out the audio. So he's just ad-libbing over the top of the track that you can hear on the radio. I mean, it even make the audio lower. Sometimes he sang along, sometimes he just ad-libbed, and that was his show. Now, he did come out and play guitar. He's actually a pretty good guitar player. He did come out and play guitar acoustic for one song, but for the rest of the show, it was him ad-libbing to his tracks that you can hear on the radio.
He did Post Malone karaoke?
He did Post Malone karaoke. And it wasn't even to a karaoke track. It was like singing along to the radio. It was Post Malone singing along to the radio, basically. And that was his show. And it was horrible. But he's a huge, I mean, it doesn't seem to have stopped his popularity.
Well, I mean, the live game doesn't matter as much as it used to. And I hate that personally, man. I think it should be. The live game should hold more weight than it does now.
But I would say on the other side, the music business is much more fragmented. And there are artists of all stripes. And there are bands that focus on the live game now, and young bands too. My friend Ashley and her fiance, Jason, they are Widespread Panic fans. This is a jam band circuit. You know, Grateful Dead started the jam band circuit, where people go, if Grateful Dead was playing in a city for three nights, the fans would go to all three nights. I mean, you just don't see them once. You see every concert you can go to. And that's the way Ashley and Jason are with Widespread Panic. They travel, and there's groups on Facebook that everybody knows each other, and they buy collectibles and trade them back and forth, and it's a whole community. And they introduced me to this young band called Goose, named Goose. None of those guys can be over 25. And they're out playing that circuit. It's not just old, you know, there's a young band, and these guys are phenomenal musicians. And they're having such a blast. You can tell they're loving it. So their live game, you probably never heard of them. Or maybe you have because I talked about them. They don't even know if they have records. They're all about the live game. So there are bands out there doing that are focusing on that. It's just much more fragmented than it used to be because anybody can have a band. There's more music. It's like I equate it to whatever term you want to call it, moving pictures, cinema, and big screen, small screen. This, if you're an actor, writer, producer, director of moving pictures, to use an umbrella term, this has got to be the golden age of golden ages because you have so many places you can go work. You can work, and not just big studio movies. You've also got all these channels, and everybody's putting out their own content. Hulu and AMC and Amazon and Netflix, and I don't think I could name them all. They all have original content, and every one of them, they need somebody to write the script. They need somebody to they need a cinematographer. They need props. They need all of that. And there's more jobs available than ever before in the history, I would say, of cinema. And cinema has only been around, you know, less than 100 years, probably. The talkies came out, what, in the 20s? Before that, it was, silent pictures. And so I feel the same way for music. I think it's the golden age for music.
Yeah. And fragmented is the right word.
Fragmented, yes.
Because you're not going to see, like, you know, it's like back in the day you would have acts that were just so, so different tour together. And nobody really cared. I mean, it's so much of it has to do with marketing now. Like if Hendrix and the Monkees existed today, there's no way they'd be touring together. And that kind of thing happened all the time back then.
Yeah, they put together similar acts for that. But, you know, with that being said, the live, I mean, I read Billboard magazine, and live, of course, the pandemic killed most of live. But, you know, the Roaring Twenties happened after the last pandemic we had. Of course, we also had a world war. But the pent-up demand, people went crazy for the Roaring Twenties, and it caused the crash, you know, 29 crash. But there's a lot of pent-up demand, and there's a lot of live shows. They're expanding. 2022 is going to be a banner year for more and more shows.
I hope so.
You know, and what band I saw, I can't remember the name, which band it was, but they're doing their first ever stadium tour. Oh, maybe it'll come to me. But a band that I thought would have done a stadium tour by this time, but the first stadium tour. So, you know, bands, that's expanding. When you're flexing, you know, when it's a band that had been around, hopefully it'll come to me. But a band that I was like, really, they've never done a stadium tour, and they're going to be doing a stadium tour. And so that means everything's on the up, not the down. I mean, if the live thing was going down, you wouldn't have a band who'd been around for a number of years and never done the stadium tour. They wouldn't be saying, hey, let's do a stadium tour. So, you know, the whole people are going to live shows. They love live shows. It's expanding. And now, unfortunately, I don't know how many venues were able to survive the pandemic, because that was a crisis. And I know there were a lot of efforts to try to help them stay afloat. Smaller venues that how many of them have closed and will never reopen? It's like restaurants. You know, some of my favorite restaurants closed and they're gone in Nashville because they couldn't survive the pandemic. There's got to be the similar scenario for live venues. How many of all the venues? I mean, you know pretty much a lot of venues in your circle.
Oh man, I'd say 20% of them bit the bullet.
Really?
If I had to guess, I don't have data, but like if I had to guess it, probably 1/5 of the venues that had live music that I performed at, you know, in the past, all went belly up because of COVID. And you know, the other ones that didn't, they're struggling. Most of them are. I mean, I know a lot of venues that used to be open 7 days a week that now they're open 3 or 4 days a week because they can't staff them.
Well, that's another issue. There's a labor shortage. Or nobody wants to work, whichever, however you want to look at it. It is.
I can't wrap my head around it.
Yeah, that's another subject we could talk about.
What's going on?
Why nobody, every place you go, I mean, it's just common. We can't get staffing. I mean, you go to a restaurant and nobody seats you because they don't have a hostess. I mean, you go, you try to order something. Like last week we talked about the incinerator toilets. You know, they're all on back order because they can't get parts or they can't get labor. And there's nobody, and companies have got open slots that they can't fill. So
I think it's just that everybody nowadays like thinks that it's an instant gratification thing for people. This is my personal take on it. I could be light years away, but this is my take on it. When I started working like bussing tables or working on farms, I knew like, you know, this is going to take me a long time. I'm at the bottom, work your way to the top. And now like we have employees and whatnot, but the mindset now isn't that anymore. A lot, too many people just aren't willing to dig in and say, I'm going to play the long game. And if I do this, you know, most people aren't willing to go bus tables at a restaurant and then say, well, after that, I'll be washing dishes. And after I wash dishes, I'll get a job cooking. And after I get a job cooking, maybe I can become a waiter and actually make some money, or maybe I'll run the place. People want it now. And it seems like this reset happened because of COVID. I'm still trying to internalize it all and understand it. Because, dude, I've driven by McDonald's and Burger King's and Wendy's. They're like now hiring $15 an hour. And I would have lost my mind when I was coming up to running towards a job like that. And all my buddies would have too. And you go in these places and there's like one person working. I don't know.
Well, you know, they got free money no matter what side of the fence you're on. I mean,
wasn't that much though. I mean, they didn't.
I know. So how are they surviving? That is something I would like to try to figure out.
There's a moratorium on payments. So
moratorium on also foreclosure on homes. I sent you that email today. Mm-hmm. And some sort of moratoriums, I don't know, people cannot have to pay their mortgage and not have to lose their home. But apparently that's all coming to an end. All of that is going to come to an end. I mean, it's you know, probably. 5 years from now, it's not going to be, yeah, you haven't paid your mortgage payment in 7 years, but we can't evict you or we can't take back the house. You know, that.
Right. The bank's going to want all of that money.
Yeah. So these things are all ending eventually.
Yeah, but I can't wrap my head around the labor shortage thing.
Yeah, I can't
either. There has to be a multitude of different things because
and there's another trend where everybody's quitting their job. You know, so many people have resigned. They got, and I'm interested in that. I mean, it's similar, it's attendant, it's on the same issue, but it's a different issue. If people quit, then they're not working there anymore, obviously, and that will attend to nobody's filling their job, right? So it is related, but quitting a job. And the answer was, the one article said there's only one answer most of the time, and that's because they got a really bad boss. And it's all about the boss. If the boss is or the supervisor, whoever the person is they report to, is a complete jerk, doesn't know how to, and people are expecting more. And it's kind of like, I don't know if this, I hope I don't get in trouble for making this analogy. It's kind of like marriages that played out over a period of time. I mean, two generations ago, women just put up with situations that were less than right for them. And there's one reason there was a lot of addiction. That's why Mommy's Little Helper and that sort of thing from the 60s. And, you know, the women gave up a lot. And there came a time, it happened slowly, I think, over a period of time where women started standing up and demanding what they should have, and you know, have a life where they're happy. And if they're not happy, just and guys were surprised. I don't know. I have a lot of friends who their wife wanted a divorce, and they were shocked because they thought, well, we're providing, everything's material, we have everything, you know, on a material standpoint, we have everything. But they wanted actually to feel fulfilled. You know, good, you know, you only have one life. So, you know, being happy is important. I get that. But, and I feel maybe, is it possible that the same kind of trend is happening? People are waking up and said, hey, it's not just a salary. I also want to, you know, I spend most of my hours of my day, of my week, of my life at my job. And I want to not hate my job. Is that possible that that's part of the, you know, the people suddenly woke up and said, you know, this pandemic was a dividing line, pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, and people were had enough time or to think about it and say, yeah, I did it.
Well, and just, I mean, many people lost loved ones.
Yeah, that's another thing.
And that kind of, you know, makes you look at life through a completely different lens. I mean, if you lose right. a cousin, especially if they're your age, you go, whoa, that can happen. And then like that realization sets in, like my day, that's going to happen to me. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
So you might be right down the pipe with that. I've quit great jobs before because of that. You know, it's like I hate going there. And it's just, you know, your happiness. And plus, I think people figured out during the lockdown that they really need less than they thought they needed. I think the lockdown kind of, you know, everybody just sat at home and watched TV. And it was like, well, we've been sitting at home watching TV for a few months and nothing terrible happens. You know, maybe I don't need to make $100,000 a year. Maybe I am okay making $30,000 a year, or maybe I'll even be happier making 30 grand a year and seeing my kids all the time and seeing, you know, my wife and being home earlier or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
I got you. And also, if you're another, I'm extrapolating here again, but you know, if you're not around all these people and you're at home, the social pressures, a peer pressure of, oh, she just got that new purse, or he just got, well, I mean, what would be the equivalent for guys? I mean, he got the latest golf clubs or whatever it is, that peer pressure of keeping up with the Joneses. If you're at home, you're not probably having that peer pressure. And we spend a lot of money as human beings on foolish things, just mm-hmm. you know, trying to impress people we don't even like. You know, yeah. Gary talks about that all the time. Uh-huh. And if you're not seeing them, if you're not in those social circles, perhaps that peer pressure has been removed and you're like, wait a minute, I don't need to get that latest fill in the blank, whatever it might be.
Right.
Clothing, car, toy. Usually for guys, it's not clothes. It's usually.
It's the truck or the bass boat or whatever.
Could be guns. I mean, whatever your hobby is, whatever you like to do. And there's that pressure to keep up. I mean, it's, you know, the old saying is everybody lives on 110% of what they make, because no matter what we make, we all end up spending it.
Well, yeah. And it's, you know, that's too many people use that as the metric. You know, too many people say, am I happy? When they ask themselves that question, am I happy? They say, well, I've got a big house, I've got a new car, I've got a boat, I must be happy. When sometimes the answer is no. And I think that the lockdown kind of showed us all that, like gave us all time to stop and think just long enough to be like, you know, maybe having a little bit more free time is more important than the big house.
Well, you know, I suspected that this might go this way. And I just remembered that I brought this book. I just, in my, one of my sessions, one of the coaching sessions that I had, they suggested that you start with why and see how can I get this in the thing. And I just got this book. I haven't read it yet, but it's apparently the book to read about start with why. Over 1 million copies sold. I can't wait to read it. And it's exactly what you're talking about. You know, what's your why? And no matter what you're trying to accomplish or what you're doing, why are you doing what? Why are we? Why am I? Why am I doing what I'm doing? What is my why? And, you know, reading a book is not the answer. But I mean, reading books is, I find I learn a lot and it helps me place.
Absolutely.
Level up. You know, always trying to level up. If you level up, you know, just a little bit, just a millimeter each day. Do this a little better than that, a little better. That's how we get closer to the things that matter to us.
Absolutely.
You know, start with why. Why are we doing this? Why am I going to a job I hate?
You know? Right. Well, your why is everything, man. You know, in my early 30s, I had friends that I can count on both hands how many friends I had that were in this scenario that, you know, worked at factories or did various jobs and despised their jobs. And they seemed abnormally concerned about me. They would be like, well, you know, you're playing music at night and that's the only source of income you have. You don't have a 401k. You don't have a retirement plan. What are you going to do? And I'm like, probably just keep playing music until I drop dead. You know what I'm saying? And they bring it up all the time. Like, they're really, really concerned, almost looking at me like I was some kind of like alien or something. And it was the strangest thing to me because the whole time my sons were infants. And in my mind, I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm made. Like, I hang out with my babies all day long and then they fall asleep and I go play music. And
like a dream life.
I thought it was, you know. And it was funny because Memphis was like 4 years old and one day he's like, Daddy, do you work? I'm like, perfect, man. You know, how many dads get to pull that one off? I'm like, yeah, I work all the time, believe it or not. I just leave for work after you go to sleep. You know, but it was the funniest thing to me. Like, it really is all perspective that my friends, that they're like, man, you should go get a job at a factory so you can have a 401k. And I'm looking at them like, dude, you should quit your job because you're miserable.
How are some of those people doing right now?
They're doing the exact same thing they were then. You know, all of them are. Because it's fear-based, you know. It was a comfort thing for them. And in many ways, I'm, you know, doing way better than they are in many ways. But that lack of fear, you know, the very fear that keeps them where they are is the very fear that guys like you and guys like me don't really have, to where we'll take risk and we'll swing for the fences, you know. So it's just interesting, man. And I used to think about it a lot. And in fact, one of my friends, I won't say any names, but he's a doctor. And he asked me one time, early 30s, same timeline. He's like, man, don't you worry? I'm like, why would I worry? He said, you don't like have a 401k. You don't really have job security. Like, you're a musician. And aren't you concerned about your future? And he's like, what would you do if you didn't play music? I'm like, man, I have to play music. And I asked him this question. I said, what are you going to do when you retire? And he's like, well, that's easy. I've thought about it a lot. He was like, I'll go fishing. He's like, I'll take naps during the day. I'll go to the gym all the time. He's like, I'll study guitar. And I'm like, okay, how old are you going to be when you retire? He's like, probably 60. I'll retire a little bit early. He's a doctor. I'm like, okay, I'm 31. You know what I do during the day? I go fishing. I take naps. I study the guitar. In my mind, it was like,
you're already doing what he wants to do when he's retired.
That's how I felt about it. But him and many of my other friends were like, dude, you're risking everything. And I'm like, what am I risking? I was risking absolutely nothing.
Well, so yeah, circle back around. Perhaps more people have woken up to the what we're talking about, fulfillment, rather than chasing, you know,
and that illusion of security.
Yeah,
and people are figuring it more and more.
That's why I love. I mean, so many things we've talked about. I've thought about Gary Vee. You know, Gary Vee just preaches. You know, don't impress people. Don't try to impress people you don't like. And you've got lots of time, you know, he says, if, you know, don't even, you got, take your entire 20s to figure out, make mistakes. I mean, don't get on a timeline. It sounds like your friends had a timeline. By the time you're early 30s, you got to have a 401k worth this six figure 401k or whatever. And Gary Vee would be completely opposite because you got a lot of life left. Normal lifespan. Obviously there are people that die, you know, but sure. If you die, then you got nothing to worry about except, you know, where you're spending eternity. But you know, if you die, then it doesn't matter if you had a 401k or not, because you're not going to need it. right? Can't take money with you. So, you know, if you live a normal life expectancy, then you got lots of time. I mean, is his statement. And he even says for people in their 50s and 60s, he said, you still got lots of time to do something different that you want to do it, you know, on your average life expectancy. Now, you know, there's all kinds of, we could get into a deep discussion about, they talk about three different levels of aging. Well, I mean, talk about post older, you got your pre, where you pretty much have all your energy that you had as younger, then in the middle where you start to get, lose some of that. And then the last where you're just basically being kept alive and very, very much. Hopefully for all of us, that third one is like, doesn't exist or is a very short period of time. Or, and then we get the functionality till just the day we die. Hopefully it would be the ideal, of course, yeah. But some people go have a slow, long haul, you know, aging, and that can't be any fun. You can't really do any of those things you want that we were talking about doing. But so for each person, it's different, and it has to do with genetics and lifestyle, you know, what kind of life that you live. Like my guitar hero Clapton is about 75, 76 now. And I saw him at a concert. We talked about this in one of the podcasts, and I was disappointed because he didn't have the facility that he had. And he's admitted that it's very difficult for him to play guitar. Although he played better than probably 99% of the guitar players in the world. But when he had that final encore and he had the other young bucks come out, he would have never let them have the final solo. But he doesn't have the facility that he had. And the reason is he's got nerve damage. And they're saying that is because he was, and he was a raging alcoholic. I mean, for decades. I mean, first it's heroin and he kicked that and he replaced that with alcohol. And horrible. And all that alcohol consumed, they said, contributed to, I mean, he's paying the price now. I mean, maybe there are other things in factoring into that, but I mean, how you live your life will, you know, you may have to pay the piper later on with things. So maybe that would have happened to him regard. Maybe that's not the real reason he has that. Maybe that's just aging. But there are other guitar players. I mean, B.B. King, when he was type 1 diabetic, such a huge fat man, but boy, he could still play and sing.
All the way to the end, man.
What's that?
All the way till the end.
All the way till the end.
I saw him right before he passed, and he sounded great.
Yeah, he could sing too. I mean, he was big as a mountain. He had to sit down when he played because he put on so much weight. He was big all the time, but man, he got big at the end.
Yeah, but he played as great as ever.
Oh, right? Absolutely. So, you know, that deterioration, it doesn't have to happen. I mean, we all age differently. And it's contributed to how we lived our life, lifestyle, and genetics plays a part too. But Buddy Guy can still play, can he?
Absolutely.
I haven't heard him play recently, but he's in his 70s, I think, isn't he?
He still can. Yeah, I think he might be 80. He's older than Clapton.
Yeah, he would be. Yeah, he would be because he was 50s. He was playing in Chicago in the 50s.
So he still plays out of his mind.
Yeah, he does. He does.
He's an outlast to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, all his peers are gone. All the guys he was with at Chess Records.
Yeah, he's the last, like, real guy.
Right, well, he was on Chess, I believe. He played all those. He was a studio guy. He played in a lot of those guys. Uncredited back then. They didn't credit them.
Baby, he was like 16 or 17 playing on a lot of that stuff. Unbelievable. Yeah, he's going to outlast everybody.
And he's, you know, I mean, B.B. King lasted a long time, but I mean, being as heavy as he was couldn't have helped him. You know, it's like I saw Kingfish, Chris Stone Kingfish, the guy's 25, and he's just, I mean, frankly, just super, super obese black man that can play the guitar. I mean, I saw him at the Ryman. Oh my gosh, can he play? And he's got a great voice. I think he's like 21, 22. He's not even 25 yet, but he's a big, big man. And that's going to catch up to him, I feel, you know, unless he can but great, great artists. Chris Stone, Kingfish. Chris Stone is his name, but his nickname is Kingfish. If anyone listening is interested in blues, I mean, he's a young blues guy that's
on a great young blues right now, man.
And everybody is, you know, he's got all the, you know, Buddy Guy and all the people are lauding his great skills and that he's, you know, keeping the blues alive. And his latest song was a 615, no, 665, 665, which is the area code of Mississippi, where he grew up, which is where Northern Mississippi, which is on the Delta, on the Mississippi River. And he says that's where the blues was born. A lot of great blues came out of there. And that's the 665 is his latest hit record. I hear it all the time in Lightning 100. It's
good.
665. So check that out. Anyone who likes some blues, Chris Stone, Kingfish Ingram. And then, if I can throw out a commercial, if anyone's listening this late in our podcast, I'm putting together my tour 2022. I'm going to, as far as Texas, I'm going to Florida. I'm going all the way out to South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, and so Chicago, and north up into Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky. If anybody is listening would like me to come to your area, I've already got one gig booked in Aberdeen, South Dakota, and just booked one today in Rochester, Minnesota, and still only have about 8 or 9 booked. It's going to be, if we fill all the dates, it'll be 85 dates.
Yeah.
So anybody wants me to come to your town, hit me up, or you have a venue you think I should play at. Solo singer, songwriter, so I'll be by myself. So all right, buddy, we've done our 40 minutes.
So yeah, man.
I guess we can call it a day if we choose to. Thank you for watching.
Yep, thanks. Peace.
Jimmy D and the Wolf. See you next time.
Bye.